Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
Browns
why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
Hey, it's Matt Leon, and just a note about this episode. I sat down with Sean Westerlund just a couple of days before the announcement that Brent Athen College was discontinuing all its athletic programs effective at the end of May of this year. Now, our conversation focused on Westerlund's career and the truly incredible job he did at Brent Athen, leading the Lions to the Division III NCAA tournament this past season. Obviously, the announcement by the school changed everything, turned a lot of worlds upside down. So wanted to give proper context before you listened to the conversation. It's a good one, though. Westerlund's career story, really worth learning more about. Hope you enjoy. Let's get to the pod.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
When the buzzer sounded, I held my two fists up and I ran across the court to my daughter. I hugged her, cried as I held her. I didn't even hug my mom. I told my mom I couldn't hug her because if I hugged her, I would have turned into a little boy and just cried in her arms because it was just such an emotional moment and so much satisfaction us being able to do something that many thought that we couldn't do.
And our guest this week is Sean Westerlund. He is the head men's basketball coach at Division III Brent Athen College, coming off a historic season this past season. Sean, thanks for coming in studio.
Thanks for having me. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So I mentioned historic season. You guys go to the Division III NCAA tournament for the first time in program history. As we're talking, I guess you're about 2.5-3 weeks removed from that. Have you had time to truly process everything, kind of put it in its proper place, give it its proper context, and take a deep breath?
Yeah, it's been a process just to even be able to process everything that we did, you know, being, you know, about 2.5 weeks removed. There's a lot of gratitude for the journey. You know, I was talking to a couple of my guys because, you know, I'm the game day admin, you know, for spring sports, and my guys work the game, and they're like, Coach, how have you felt about the season, everything like that? And it's like, well, for me, I still get emotional just when I look at social media posts or videos from winning the championship and all that, just because it's been a 4-year journey to go from worst to first at Brent Athen College, and, you know, to all the guys that helped contribute to that, to climb the mountain to finish the job. It's been really special, and I'm at a loss for words at everything that we were able to accomplish because it exceeded my wildest expectations. You know, I thought that we could do it and I believed that we could do it, but to do it the way that we did, 20-9, 15 game win streak, 18-3 in our last 21 games, like it was just a heck of a run.
At what point during the season, given all that, did you think like, yeah, we've really got a shot at this? Was there a game or a moment where, I don't want to say turn the corner because you were good, but
yeah,
where you like thought, we have that gear you need to do the things we want to do?
So it's twofold. We beat Salisbury at home on December 10th, and you know, right before break, we went to St. Mary's and won. It's like, all right, we're starting to put some things together. But truthfully, when I knew that we could do it is when we beat Penn State Harrisburg on January 14th by 4. We jumped out to a 14-15-point lead. They did a great job battling back, but we were in control the entire game. And it's like, okay, I know this team can do something special. That was win 3 in a row and 2025, and we went on to win 12 more additional games in a row, so 15 total. And that Penn State Harrisburg game on January 14th, it's like, man, like we have this stuff to do it.
You beat, I believe, was Notre Dame Maryland in the United East Championship game to go to the NCAA tournament. Take me through winning that game and the emotions, and is it a blur or is it a clear picture for you?
It is a very clear picture for me. We won 82-69, and I know that we played a really poor first half of basketball. They jumped out to an 8-0 lead. We had to call a timeout. We then responded with our own 10-0 run to take the lead, and then they hit us back with a, I think it was like a 12-2, 12-4 run that we had to call another timeout. The physicality of the game, we had to adjust to that. And, you know, credit to the guys, they were able to adjust really well, not only how we had to guard defensively, but how we had to attack the paint. I thought early on in the game, we were settling for a lot of dribble jumpers, but we go into half down one. One of their players picked up a technical, and then we follow up the technical with an and-one layup. And so that got us down to 140-39 going into half. And it's like, all right, great, well, now we can make the adjustments that we need to at halftime. And we were in control from that entire second half. And I remember feeling the win and that we were going to do it at the 9-minute mark. And so we just, and I had to control myself. I had to control my emotions because it felt like really good, but there's still so much time left. I could sense our guys feeling that they're going to win it too. And so I had to try and calm them down and just stay focused on the task at hand. And credit to the guys. They really buckled down defensively. I think the first 15 minutes of the second half, we held Notre Dame 4 of 25 shooting from the field. So they really defended well and finished the possessions with great rebounds. So and I still remember when the buzzer sounded, I held my two fists up and I ran across the court to my daughter. I hugged her, cried as I held her. I didn't even hug my mom. I told my mom I couldn't hug her because if I hugged her, I would have turned into a little boy and just cried in her arms because it was just such an emotional moment and so much satisfaction us being able to do something that many thought that we couldn't do.
So then you go to the NCAA tournament, and we talked prior to the NCAA tournament, and you guys got a tough draw with a legendary Division III program, Hampton Sydney, and they took care of business in the first round. But you talk about that emotion. How difficult is it to go from that, you know, that is just this absolutely draining in a good way moment, and then have to recharge the battery to get ready for the next biggest game in program history?
To be honest, I didn't even realize how much it was taking out of me until Saturday morning when I woke up after the Hampton Sydney game, and I just felt so drained. Just everything was, I didn't want to interact with anyone. I was tired. I felt sore. But the whole thing is like you're just on to the next one. And it felt like I was just on this roller coaster ride. Basically from, you know, that Harrisburg game where we got the third win in a row, it's like, okay, now we got to protect what we're fighting for. And it's just the next one, the next one, the next one. Then there isn't a next one. And it's like, well, what do we do now? What do I do? And that's why it's taking some time to just process all the emotions from the season. And, you know, but the guys were such culture drivers in being able to win at a place that's never experienced winning. It's so hard to do. They're such torchlighters. I believe there's two types of people in this world, torch carriers and torchlighters. Torchlighters are someone that wants to blaze the path. They want to be a part of history. They want to do something that's never been done before. And to do that, And we've talked, like, we didn't even realize everything that went into winning a championship until now. We can look back and be like, wow, like, it was even more difficult than we ever could have imagined. But there's so much satisfaction in the fact that we did climb that mountain.
And to that point, one of the things I think is when it comes to, like, learning how to win and learning how to do things, I do think it has to be player driven. You can do, you can direct, you can point out, you can put on the whiteboard, but kids got to do it. They've got to make the plays. They've got to push through when things aren't going their way. How difficult is that as a coach to cede that power that, you know, that they've got to find a way.
Yeah. So it's interesting. We started really poorly. We were 2-6 and our culture was awful. You know, we had the wrong guys in the wrong spots on the bus, and we had to let go of some guys and get the right people in the right spots on the bus. And then from there, we had to define things a bit better with our culture, and we had to shift our schedule. I remember telling you a couple weeks ago that we went to 2 days of culture, 2 days of practice, and 2 game days, 1 off day. And in those days of culture, we had to define what winning is, right? Like, yes, I have to cede control to them, but if I could help them understand what they have to do to be a winner, that would be great. And the exercise that we did is we had every guy write down what is their definition of a winner and what is the definition of a winning team. The only caveat is that it had to be something consistent. And so every guy read their definition, and then we all had to raise our hand about whether or not we do it or our team does this. And in full transparency, there was only one thing our team raised our hand for, and that was confidence. And I said, so great, we have the confidence that we have the ability to do it. But if we want to be a winning team and we're defining what that is and we're not doing any of it, then we're actively choosing to be losers. And so we have to fix that. And so what we did is we simplified winning to 3 things. Number one is consistency. You got to do everything so consistent. Number two is you got to max out, right? Hardworking, max out, give me your very best effort each day. And if you can do that while being consistent, okay, the last thing is perspective. What dog are you feeding? Are you going to make excuses? Well, no. Losers make excuses. Winners find solutions. Are you going to be denied when you hit adversity? Because you are going to hit adversity. Teams are going to make runs. You're not going to get the best calls. You are going to be in a hostile environment. You are going to miss shots. You are going to have turnovers. Those aren't the things that define whether or not you're a winner or a loser. It's your response to those things. And so if you can be consistent, you can max out your effort, and you can have the right mentality, then you're going to win more often than not. And once we defined that, it really took off for our guys. Our practices got way more competitive. They started holding each other more accountable. And then we came up with this definition of, do you want to be a contender or a pretender, right? Because pretenders, they go through the motions. They're okay when things are going well. But in those crisis moments, in those adverse moments, that's when you get revealed if you're actually real about being a winner, being a contender. And credit to them, they bought into it. You know, I stopped fighting and stopped begging for them to buy into what it was. They're just like, yep, this is what we have to do. And in order to have a different result, you have to do things differently. And last year's heartbreaking end was a great opportunity for us to grow and use those lessons. And the maturity our guys showed throughout our run was amazing, because I don't believe we could have done that without the lessons from last year. I really don't.
I think I asked you this because this is one of my standard questions going into the NCAA term when I'm talking to coaches, especially in your position where this was a first, this was something new. You know, and I probably asked you, like, do you have a conversation with the kids, like the balancing act of savoring this moment, but also let's not go in wide-eyed because we want to shock the world and we're here to do a job. Was it tough for you to not coach differently going into the NCAA tournament?
I feel like my process is my process. We tried to keep things as normal and as usual as possible, from our practice plan being, we did not change our practice plan from January 3rd and on. It was the same exact practice plan, same exact format. The guys liked it. They bought into it. So we kept that the same. You know, even shoot arounds, like we never did a shoot around. You know, my guys didn't like it. They just wanted to work out. And so when the national tournament came and we had our shoot around time, I said, all right, I'm not going to go. Y'all go and y'all can work out and do your thing. And so we tried to keep it as normal as possible. I think for me when I was much younger in my profession as a head coach, I did change for certain moments. And I had to grow from that. Because at the end of the day, as long as your process is good, you can live with whatever results those are. And in the Hampton-Sydney game, I realized that there are certain things within our process that we need to tweak and get better at. And you know, if we're fortunate enough to go back to the national tournament next year, we're going to have those lessons to be better in those moments. But as far as like trying to change and coach differently than what got us there, no, that's not who I am.
Let's dig into your backstory now. Did you always figure you were going to coach growing up? I know you played a ton of sports growing up, but was coaching always going to be an eventuality for you?
No. I'll be honest. So I have an identical twin brother who also coaches college basketball at University of Northwestern Ohio, an NAIA school. And he knew he wanted to be a coach from the time he was 14 years old. And so we were both at Lancaster Bible College playing multiple sports. And he got the varsity head coaching job as a sophomore, 19-year-old sophomore at Harford Christian School in Darlington, Maryland. So it was about an hour, 15-minute commute from Lancaster Bible. And he asked me, Sean, I'd like you to work with my point guards. And I said, there's no chance I'm going to do that. And he said, well, just give me a day. And I was like, fine, I'll give you a day. And that day turned to 6 years at Harford Christian, 3 as the assistant coach, 3 years as the head coach. And it completely changed my life. I honestly wanted to be in the FBI. I was accepted into the local police academy in my local municipality back home in Maryland. And I had the choice of coaching high school basketball for $1,500 or to go into the police academy where you're guaranteed $52,000, great benefits and all that. And I chose the $1,500 route, commuting 350 miles a day to coach high school basketball. My dad thought I was an idiot.
What clicked in that one day you gave your brother?
Honestly, I'm a competition addict and I love to build. I love to be a part of the building process and doing something that hasn't been done before. And for Harford Christian, they'd only had 8 wins in the last 4 years. And so there's an opportunity for my brother and I to partner together to building a really successful program. And it had its lumps. You know, like we went 6-22 our first year, 12-11 the second year, and then we went 24-6 that third and final year with Rich as the head coach, and won the conference championship, which was the first time in 17 years, won the state championship at the Division II level, which is the first in program history. And so it's like, all right, well, now I have an opportunity when my brother moved on to put my own stamp on the program. And we were able to elevate it even greater. And I was very proud of what we were able to do at Harford Christian. People thought I was crazy because of the commute. Like 350 miles a day is not ideal. I was living in Howard County, driving down to Frederick County, being a lot attendant at a car dealership where I'd work from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then I'd drive at 3 p.m. I'd drive all the way up to Bel Air, Maryland to monitor study hall and have practices. And then I'd drop off 5 of my players because the bus service stopped working at 3 o'clock. And so in order for them to play basketball, I had to drop them off at their parents' house. And then I'd go back home to Howard County, and I'd do that every single day. But it sharpened me. It was a grind, but I'm so grateful for that part of my story because we did something so special, and I have a lot of satisfaction in the work that we did put in to bring the best era of Harford Christian basketball during that time.
What were the big lessons you had to learn? Because it sounds like early on you were driven just by that competition and wanting to get better, but that only gets you out of the gate. Like,
correct.
What were the big questions you had to answer, the big things you had to learn about coaching to take it to different levels?
So I'll be honest, when I got the head assistant coaching job at Hood College in Frederick, Maryland, I have never felt more fraudulent in my life. We were in the first practice, October 15th, 2016. And I just realized I'm way out of my depth. And I thought I was the best thing since Wonder Bread because at the high school level, we had won a national championship. We won 3 more consecutive conference championships with me as head coach, state runner up with 4 sophomores and a junior. And I thought, man, like I got this stuff figured out. I was a brash 25-year-old that you couldn't tell anything to. And I remember after that first practice, I talked to Chad Dickman, my boss, and I said, man, like I don't know how I can bring value. Like, I feel out of my league here. And he said, well, Sean, I don't want to define your role by what you can't do. I want to define your role by what you can do. And he said, we can catch you up on the X's and O's. We can catch you up on the little nuances. But let's lean into your strengths because that's the value that you can bring to our program. And I told him, I believe I'm a great recruiter. I believe I have a great leadership development program. And I could do really well with social media. And he's like, yep, run with it. And we were able to create a unique social media brand that the Hood men's basketball team still uses with Let It Fly. And they are well known in the country in Division III landscape as the most efficient offense that shoots the most threes. And so I'm really proud of the work that we did. The recruiting class that I was primarily responsible for, it helped lead Hood to a conference championship. So even though I wasn't there because it was my first year at Brenathen, they were able to finish the job. And so there's a lot of things I'm proud of, but I had to learn humility. I had to learn different X's and O's because I was only exposed to so much. And so by talking to more people, surrounding myself with people that are more knowledgeable, more experienced, that helped me grow a ton as a coach.
What was it that had you feeling so overwhelmed? Was it like the structure? Was it the level of plays they were running and design and stuff like that? Like it was just so pinpoint? Or what was it that had you feeling like, uh-oh, I don't know here?
So the X's and O's, I had never been taught basketball that way. And it's not a knock on my basketball experience. It's just like, man, screening angles, distorting the tag in ball screen offense, how you can run certain actions to get certain looks. It was just, man, like, and even the structure, right? Like I had played for my high school coach. I worked for my brother who played for my high school coach. So there's a lot of similarities there. And so it's a completely different structure, completely different style of play. And, you know, I'm grateful for it because I take a lot of the stuff that they've done. I put my own spin on it. But it really was just the X's and O's standpoint. I can do relationships. I truly believe I was put on this earth to impact and inspire lives through transformational relationships so that we can create a better world. And so the actual getting to know the players was not hard for me, right? Like the reason why I'm called Coach Wes is that's the nickname that they gave me. So no one calls me Coach Western because everyone at Hood just called me Coach Wes. And I had a really close relationship with all of those guys. But the X's and O's, it was definitely, it took me some time to get up to speed. But I still remember we were playing Goucher College, and it's the time that I earned Chad's trust. And it was a critical play, and I was like, Chad, run stair for Scott Bolin. And stair was a staggered flare screen. He ends up running it. Scott hits the three. We go up by seven. It's a dagger. And I still remember he high-fives me. He's like, that's a great effing call. And you know, from that point on, it just – I started to feel more at home in my process and in my place at Hood Basketball.
Did the development of the X and O's, did it come through just the natural run of coaching? Did you start to watch other film, watch, you know, read, stuff like that?
Yeah, I started reading, started talking to more people, started trying to study a lot more, picking different coaches' brains on why do they run these certain things, why they do certain things, and then just creating a Rolodex. So I have this Google Excel sheet that I have coaching resources, and I have every single set that we've ever run. And then I just type in a little description of it, and I have all these different plays drawn up in a notebook. And so I have different things that we can utilize with different teams because every team is going to be different. You know, we ran a completely different offense this year with the same group that we had back from 23-24 because the offense that we ran last year just wasn't the best fit. And so we had to learn and tweak certain things to give our guys better looks. And so I think that's where I've been able to grow. And you know, I'm still young. I barely know anything. You know, I think there's a lot more that I can learn. And I think I'll look back 10 years from now and be like, yeah, like I still have more stuff to grow and learn.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Sean Westerlund in just a couple of moments. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. It's time to drive smarter with high-tech features and excellent reliability. It's time for intelligent design plus exciting performance. Get a new vehicle you'll love. Check out the Honda Civic, Accord, or HRV. Contact your local Honda dealer today. See dealer for finance details. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Sean Westerlund, who led the Division III Bryn Athyn College men's basketball team to the NCAA tournament this past season. When it comes to X's and O's, how much of a balancing act is it between running stuff that you're good at, the kids are comfortable with, but also not becoming stale? You know, like you said, your team last year, yeah, it just wasn't the best fit. But I would imagine it's easy to fall into the trap of, well, this isn't working, let's do this. And you maybe not give it enough time to really develop. Is that from a coaching standpoint, is that a balancing act, especially when you're judged on wins and losses?
Yeah, so a great question. I think with X's and O's, you want to have an identity, right? And so defensively, we know exactly what we're going to do. We know exactly the type of shots we want to give up and what type of pressure we want to create, how we're going to guard on the ball screens, and it simplifies things for our guys. Offensively, I'm always going to be partial to ball screen. I think what I needed to grow in as a coach, specifically with this group, is we needed to try and establish the low post a lot more in creating actions within ball screen that could establish our postmen. Because we had great guards that could post up. We had an excellent big man in Jalen Parker who was a menace on the block. And then even Will Little is a matchup nightmare at 6'6". And so I do think it's a balance. But in our set package, like, we have certain ball screen things where, you know, we're distorting tags. And so we have five different actions that look all very similar that just have a slight little wrinkle to it. And so that way we're not getting stale. But I think, too, when you dictate things for your players, it doesn't overload them within freedom. So they can have freedom within the sets. But if you give them too much freedom, then they're not necessarily always going to be able to make the right choice. And so we want them to play free, want them to understand how to play in advantage basketball situations, but let's create those advantages that they're used to reading in practice. And so that's kind of what we did this year, where we felt like we married the best of both worlds, giving them the freedom to go and be who they are, while also generating the shot profile and the type of shots that they would thrive in as well.
How often, if ever, do you do something from a play call standpoint that is maybe something you worked on in camp but you haven't dealt with, but it just kind of comes to you in the moment that what the other team's doing, boy, if we could do X, Y, and Z, we would totally neutralize it. Is that something that comes up often? Is that something that someone who doesn't really understand the X's and O's would think happens a lot, but it really doesn't? Like, is there anything like that that you have to deal with?
Yeah, so there's been a couple examples where we've worked on things and we have it in our back pocket for when we need it. Our press break against Penn College and Notre Dame, or I think it was Wilson College and Notre Dame, in the playoffs, we ran the same exact press break. We had worked on it earlier in the year. We had not shown it until playoffs. They were full out pressing, and we hit a home run pass to seal the game, both games. And it's just something that's like, all right, cool. Like, if we were just prepared for that situation. You know, we had a game plan this year against Karen where, based off the first matchup, you know, we had Will Little guard certain fives at times. JP's a great help defender and rim protector, and we had a little wrinkle where we would put JP on the worst offensive guard that we did not think was necessarily going to be an outside threat that he could really help off of, and funnel guys to him and then allow Will to push the big out that's a little bit more perimeter-oriented. And we did that against Karen, and it really neutralized their offense. They scored 52 points, 53 points, which was their lowest total in like the last 3 years. And so there's definitely things that we have in our back pocket that we can go to, just because you can't be one-dimensional, right? At the end of the day, like, the whole point within your X's and O's is let's win the game. So let's find the thing that allows us to win it. Now, there's a flip side of that too, where I thought that we could potentially change our ball screen coverage against Penn College in the semifinal, and it nearly lost us the game. We should have just switched 1 through 5, which is what we typically do. And I was like, no, like, the five man's not a shooting threat. We can play drop coverage. And we just didn't do a good job at it. And it's something that you just kind of live and learn. You experiment things, and hopefully in the experimentation, you're all on the right side of things more than you're on the wrong side of things.
Now, I imagine you played a ton of sports growing up. Was basketball your top sport, or you were more of a soccer guy as far as excelling in the field?
Yeah, so my best sport growing up was baseball. Okay. That was what I was most naturally gifted in, but it wasn't my favorite sport by any means. The sports of soccer was the sport that I had the most success at the collegiate level, where I was a two-time all-region guy and first-team all-conference guy at Lancaster Bible. You know, but I played everything with a ball. You know, I tried lacrosse, I tried wrestling, I tried hockey, soccer, basketball, baseball, football, all of it. And I was fortunate to have parents that gave me those opportunities to explore sports, because I don't know where I'd be without the realm of sports and you know, team building and all of those things. And so, yeah, I played on multiple travel baseball teams, multiple travel soccer teams. The only sport that I did not do travel ball or AU ball was basketball. I only played for my high school team, and that was it.
So is it possible that if your brother had brought you out to work with the fullbacks in soccer for one day, that we might be talking about your soccer coaching career? Do you think it was the idea and the opportunity of coaching, and it just happened to be basketball in that moment that led you, or do you think you would have eventually found your way to basketball?
Basketball is always my favorite sport. So okay. I don't think that I would have coached soccer, baseball. Actually, it's funny. My barber, he's a big baseball fanatic, and he asked me, would you coach baseball? I was like, no, I'd never. coach baseball. Like, basketball is just something that I'm very passionate about, and I have the knowledge and been blessed with the opportunities. So I think if I were to coach, which I am, it was always going to end up being basketball.
So when you're coaching in high school, you're young to be a head coach. And when you take over at Bryn Athyn, you're young to be a head coach. Benefits and pitfalls of being in charge at that young age.
So at the high school level, the parents thought I was their son. And so when you have to have those difficult conversations with your student athletes and parents about, hey, your son's not meeting the standard, and then they want to try and parent you, that's not how it goes. I think when you are young, you have to establish yourself as a leader and have very firm boundaries, not only with your student athletes, but with your parents. You know, I've had difficult conversations, even with some of my parents of my Bryn Athyn student athletes. And it's these hard conversations just because I'm 33 right now, but I turned 29 shortly after I got the job at Bryn Athyn. Being able to have those boundaries were really important. I think too, for me, and it's just something that I've had to continue to learn, is just lean more into humility, right? Like, don't believe that you know it all. I do think early on in my Bryn Athyn head coaching career, I didn't realize how hard it was going to be. And, you know, I'm going to try and take those lessons for when we try and go back to back. I think it's going to be even harder to go back to back this year just because of how hard it was just to win one of these things. And so those were some of the lessons that I had to learn. I think the strengths is being able to connect with my guys has never been an issue. They have thoroughly enjoyed their experience with me as their coach. I think I have a unique approach with how real and direct I am with them and with their families about just, this is what it is. You can take it or leave it. I tell them the three reasons why people tell us yes. I tell them the three reasons why people tell us no, and you know how they'll fit. I never guarantee anything because to me, guaranteeing someone this is exactly what you're going to get creates entitlement, and we want a culture of work and a culture of earning things. So I think the strongest case for me as a younger head coach has just been my ability to connect with my guys on a deeper level.
Are you prepared, or do you think as you get older that will become more difficult? Not from a personality standpoint, but the culture's going to be different. I don't mean the team culture. I just mean culture in the world is going to be different. You're going to be further removed from – because I remember I used to be the young guy here at the station. And one day you wake up and you realize, like, wait a minute. Like, I'm now in the top half of the people that are older here. How did that happen? And then you wake up another day and you're like, oh, my God, the person I worked with wasn't alive when I started here. Like, you had those – moments, and I'm not being tongue-in-cheek, like, you really have these. Are you prepared, and do you think there will become days as you become a more seasoned and an older head coach where, like I said, it's not a personality thing, it's just as you get older, it can become tougher to connect to young kids.
1,000%. I think I'm even seeing that somewhat now, like, even in the music that, like, I listen to rap music just like they do, but I don't get the young boy craze. I don't. Like, he's just not my favorite rapper. My guys love him, you know, but there's certain rappers that they'll introduce me to, and I'm like, all right, great. Like, I'm going to add this guy onto my playlist and everything like that. And I think having awareness is a really important thing. And so as long as I'm aware that, hey, things are changing and I'm authentic and I'm genuine and wanting to get to know them, I think that will allow me to bridge that gap a little bit. My guys call me Unc. I don't know how I feel about that. You know, they're just like, what's up, Unc? And you know, I don't feel like I'm on. You know, sometimes they'll call me OG, and I'm not even an OG yet. Like, I'm 33, but it's definitely something I'm acutely aware of, because with each year I get further and further removed from my own experience. Like, when I started this, I'm like, oh, I'm 5 years removed from my college experience. Now I'm over a decade removed from my college experience, and so it's just, again, knowing who I am, being authentic and genuine, and I think that's what kids want. They just want a level of authenticity and genuineness that they don't get a lot of. Like, look at social media, so much of it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
So much is like just the illusion of what they want you to see in their life.
The best case scenario of the best day.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when you can be genuine and authentic and vulnerable too, right? Like, I've gone through a lot of personal turmoil in the last 2 years, and my guys know it. right? They know exactly what I've been through. They know the emotions that I feel on a daily basis. And, you know, they've been really supportive of me and my daughter and all of that. And, you know, but I think when you look at connecting and as you get older, being authentic, being genuine, and being vulnerable will help bridge that gap. And so that's what I've been trying to do.
You got hired in Brynath in April of 2020?
Yes.
So we're a month into COVID. What is that experience like getting your first collegiate head coaching job in the first weeks of a global pandemic where everyone's kind of living for the next 12 hours? I don't mean to get too dramatic, no, but like life is changing
so
by the day. Yeah.
It was odd. Like, I never stepped foot on campus for the interview process. I didn't even meet my direct boss in person until October. Like, she and I did not run into each other at all. And so that was a very unique conversation because she was like, oh, I thought you'd be taller based off of the Zoom. And you know, I'm 5'9". Like, it is what it is. You know, but even not being able to practice, you know, we had 19 total practices that year. In a normal season, you'd get 17 before your first game. And so we had 19 total practices and we were able to scrape together 8 exhibitions. We had a pseudo bubble where we were getting tested 2 to 3 times per week. One positive test would shut the whole season down. And it was unique. Now, that said, it allowed us to do certain things that I'm so grateful for because I felt like it gave us a long runway to build culture, to build our identity, to invest into the people. And that first team and many of those guys on that first team, those are some of the strongest connections that my program has been able to generate and create, not only with me as their coach, with them as student athletes, but even with them as teammates. We went through a war together and it was very difficult. And so I did not know what I was signing up for when taking a head coaching job as COVID was starting. I don't think any of us thought COVID was going to last as long as it did.
Oh, those first couple months, it was just like, well, 3 weeks, yeah. 3 weeks, and we'll see what happens.
A never ending, mm-hmm. Oh, we're going to kick this can down the road.
Yeah.
And that made it difficult.
What was it about the Brynath job, I mean, COVID aside, that made it the right opportunity for you? Like, did the opportunity draw your attention, or had you decided that you were ready to start looking for head coaching jobs and you came across the Brynath job?
So I had been actively hunting head coaching jobs for the right fit. You know, Hood College was a great situation. I was well compensated as an assistant coach and admission counselor. We were going to be really good again. And I told Chad that the only way that I was going to leave Hood College is if it was a full-time head coaching opportunity in a place that I felt like we could win at and the salary was going to be more than what I was making at Hood College. And so, you know, credit to him as my boss. He was aware. He actively helped me get an interview at Brynath. And what drew me to Brynath, and I'll be honest, when I applied, I had no idea the school size. I had no idea the religious affiliation of the college. I just knew it was a young program that had not even been around for 10 years at that point, competing in the CSAC conference. And it was in basically the Philadelphia area. And so for me, I wanted to live in a major city. Like, that was important for me. Being able to live in Philadelphia would be ideal. I thought the league, there's great coaches in the CSAC. Now, you know, CSAC joined with United East. But I felt there was opportunity for us to flip the program fairly quickly. And I loved the idea of being able to build. I loved the idea of taking something from the ground up and putting your stamp on it. And it's something that has been a part of my entire story, being at Lancaster Bible College and being a part of the soccer program, doing stuff that they've never done before. Hartford Christian, Hood College in a way, and now here at Brynath. So I got the interview, and then that's when I started doing my deep dive on things. And I'll be honest, that I wasn't sure about the religious affiliation, right? I wasn't sure if that was going to be necessarily the best fit for me at that time in my life. And I wasn't sure about the school size. You know, going to a school with 300, 350 kids, that's a unique experience. On top of that, having to do the religion classes, having to do chapel, unique experience. And so I'd do some self-reflection when I was going through the interview process. And, you know, one of our core values in our program, and it's personal to me, is connection. Connection is the greatest gift we ever been given. And I had to really do some soul searching of if connection is actually a core value of mine and in alignment. Because what greater way can you live out connection than being at Bryn Athyn College with 300-350 students where everyone's going to know who you are, everyone's going to be involved in your dream and partner with you. And so when push came to shove, I was like, well, this is a wonderful opportunity to do something really special. And are there going to be potential drawbacks that everyone loves or not everyone loves? Absolutely. There's no perfect thing in this world. There's no perfect job. The perfect job is what you create. And so I felt very comfortable about the potential negative selling points that people would use against Bryn Athyn, that I felt like they were actually positives, and we just had to be very direct in who we recruited and our process to that and attract. Like, we don't have to be for everyone. That's the beautiful thing about this world is you're not for everyone, I'm not for everyone, but we are for certain people. And those people that see that value, that's when magic can happen. And so that's what ultimately led me to accept the Bryn Athyn job, is just a chance to make history at a small school that was similar to a lot of the experiences that I've had in my life at Hartford Christian, Lancaster Bible, and even Hood in some capacity.
We talked about your competitiveness. Love to win or hate to lose? Which resonates more with you?
I hate to lose. For you to hate to lose, that means you're going to do everything you can to make sure that doesn't happen. And maybe that's a negative view of things, but I want the person that is so, when I say fearful, they're just willing to chop off their arm. They're willing to go attack someone to make sure that they do not lose. It's that hunger and that desperation, the back against the wall. That's what I identify with, the chip on the shoulder. So I think when you have that, then you're not going to be denied. Then the love to win is going to happen because you hate to lose so much.
I think I know the answer to this, but favorite part of your job?
The guys. Being able to connect with them and the relationships. It's so special to see how each individual relationship develops. My assistant coach, Drew Gene Lewis, he's been with me for 5 years. I coached him for 3 years, and he's been my top assistant for 2 years. I think of Jalen Jackson and us both identifying with losing our fathers at a young age and being able to connect through like shared pain and struggle and the late night calls. It's the reason why I do this is for the people. Basketball is just a toolbox I get to use to help teach them about life and helping them maximize their potential as human beings.
Sean Westerlund, thanks for coming in. This was great.
Thank you.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Sean Westerlund for being our guest this week and coming in studio to chat. Now, if you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.